Hello, friends. Kyle Tierman here, and I have in my hand a book called David White Essentials. David White, W-H-Y-T-E, is a fantastic poet who I first discovered on the Waking Up app. This is Sam Harris's meditation app, and David has a series of poems that he reads. He has a very very dramatic and engaging voice. So if you are on the Waking Up app, or even if you're not, I think it's a great app. No affiliation, but it's worth listening to his poems. And I went to see David at a reading and bought this book. So I just opened to a random page and I'm going to read it. This poem is called To Break a Promise. Make a place of prayer. No fuss now. Just lean into the white brilliance and say what you needed to say. All along, nothing too much. Words as simple and as yours and as heard as the bird song above your head or the river running gently beside you. Let your words join one to another, the way stone nestles on stone, the way water just leaves and goes into the sea, the way your promise breathes and belongs with every other promise the world has ever made. Now, let them go on. Leave your words to carry their own life. Without you, let the promise go with the river. Stand up now. Have faith. Walk away. Again, that was a poem from David White, W-H-Y-T-E, Essentials. Wonderful poet. And poetry is it's better than scrolling Instagram. Tell you that. I have been thinking, and I want to get you all of your feedback. We're a few months into this book club now, and I'm feeling a little rickety on it, and you may be too, because I'm sending these emails out with a book and prompting questions. It hit me the other night that most of you who are on my newsletter at tierman.substack.com aren't in the book club, and it's probably annoying to be getting these emails about books that you're not reading. And furthermore, none of it is really my writing. It's just a question about a book and then a piece of that book. So the intention was, hey, let's all read more. These will be short books and can kind of engage with it. But I have this assumption that a lot of you sign up for my newsletter because you want to hear more about my thoughts, my writing, my perspective on the world. I think that's why I sign up. That's at least why I sign up for people's newsletters. I want to know what they think about something. And because of that, I'm going to take a pause on the book club moving forward and instead write newsletters that answer a question, and each newsletter will be a question. That'll be the subject, and then it'll be my answer to that question, and you can all answer that question in your own way. This excites me because I think that questions are often much more powerful than statements, and we can solve a lot of problems in our lives and think about the day differently when we have the right question in our minds. This idea came to me because I was talking to someone and they were reading some children's book, and in it they were talking about imagination. This person, like this father was talking to a daughter about imagination, and She said, what's imagination? And he said, look at a street. Are you looking at the street? Now tell me what's not there. And she said, well, you know, an airplane is not in the street. He goes, what else is in the street? Well, an elephant is in the street. Okay, so that's imagination. Anything that's not there is your mind making it up. And I like that. Like, that could be a question to the newsletter. What's not there? And then throughout that day, I'm answering that question in my own, you know, burst of a newsletter, but then you answer it in your own way. So would love to know if you think that's a fun idea. You can just reply to on any one of the posts on my Substack, and I'm just going to give it a shot. And one of the best things about digital media is that we have the opportunity to redirect really easily in a way that we didn't have when we were chiseling into stone tablets. I do not envy those folks, but fuck, it would be pretty badass. I'd just be like, I'm gonna write into a stone tablet, and then you're gonna carry this stone tablet and you're gonna read it. God damn. Whew. All right. Keiko Kurita is a good friend of mine. She is a... Oh, God. You guys hear that? That was my time timer. So I have a little time timer on my desk here that looks like a cooking timer. And I will set it whenever I do writing sessions. I'll crank it up to 1 hour. And it locks me into gear. I really enjoy it because I don't feel... like I'm writing on an oblivious timeline. You know, I know when it ends. So that says a lot about who I am and what my personality is. And while uploading this podcast, I decide I'm going to set a timer and then I'm going to stop when that timer ends. But now I'm breaking that rule because I'm mid intro. So you can get the time timer wherever time timers are sold. And it is a great little productivity tool. Back to Keiko. Keiko is a board-certified family nurse practitioner working in Maine as a primary care provider. She received a Master's of Science in Nursing from the University of Southern Maine. Previously, she taught yoga and claims to be inspired by rainbows. I've known Keiko since high school. She's always been one of the most original thinkers I know, with a deep appreciation for science-based tools to better understand health. Her health journey began in college when she was hit with her own chronic issues, and her impressive wealth of knowledge comes from an attempt to, first and foremost, better understand her own body and mind. In this podcast, we explore topics such as the dangers of PFAS and the new lawsuit headed up by Aaron Brockovich, basic lab tests and who may want to get them, anemia in girls due to heavy bleeding, B12 vitamins, alcohol, sleep, and how to rethink comfort. Please welcome to the show, Keiko Kurita.
Kyle Tierman here. I'm in Cape Town.
I was the only journalist in northern Nigeria.
It's not an adventure until you get lost in Tijuana.
If you get caught inside by a giant wave, you feel really alone.
I love the adventure of waking up and not knowing what will happen and that being my job.
I'm standing at a desert oasis right now.
A lot of tourists don't see this part of Bali.
Smiles and thumbs up. Thumbs up.
Let's do it. You told me just now that your job is living through other people. I thought that was a really interesting way to put it. What do you mean by that?
I get to experience other people's lives in a very intimate way that a lot of people don't get to interact with people. So it's like a huge privilege to like be in healthcare and be with someone talking about very rich issues for them, because
right.
Someone will come in for some physical complaint, but you can tell just like on their face and through their words that like that's not what's
that's
going
not
on
the thing. Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's not what's going on for them. So you get at least I like to ask the question like, how are you doing? Or like, what's new for you since the last time I saw you is something that I often ask, because some people I see on a regular basis of like every 3 months, some people I see once a year. And I found that as a way for people to give like an open question of like, what is going on for you? And sometimes it's a joyous, like, I just had a grandchild, or,
right.
Yeah. Like, I just want to trip this place. And sometimes it's like, I am so stressed out right now, or like, I've been really struggling with this, or it's, yeah, find right. it as a gateway.
Right. You're leaving it a little more open-ended than just saying, oh, how's the shoulder? Or, you know, something that might be so myopic that's not really the issue.
Yeah.
I have had chronic wrist issues for a long time because I've broken my arm so many times.
You've broken lots of parts of your
body. So many parts of my body. It's crazy. I got to learn how to duck and roll. I just have not been able to figure that one. I just face first, boom, every time. And I've found that my wrist will start to hurt when I'm in stressful weeks at work, reliably. And for a long time, I thought it was just physical. And I had like, okay, well, I'm going to get an ergonomic keyboard and I'm going to do all these wrist exercises. And for sure, that's part of it. But if I'm not stressed, I can work on a laptop all day long and barely feel any problem. And if it's that thing that we were just talking about before we went on, like the shallow breathing, the tight shoulders, the pain will show up in my wrist. So it makes sense that you would ask a more open-ended question to really try and get to a more more depth in figuring out what the problem actually is with your patients.
Yeah, because a lot of times the biggest barrier to people taking care of themselves is not like, oh, I didn't take my medication that day and that's why my blood pressure is high. It's like, what? So why? Why did you not take your medication that day? Like, what's going on that's kind of blocking people from having a routine that allows them to remember to take it? Or why, like, is there, sometimes it's actually self-sabotage, I feel like, for some people. I mean, all of our lives, it's like we do certain things that we know are good for ourselves and other things that we know are
not gonna do.
Not gonna do anything.
I don't deserve this. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But
so yeah. So describe to me what it looks like in the place that you work and what a session might be. So someone walks in and you say, how you doing? What's new for you? Just paint a bit more of a picture for me of what that day-to-day looks like.
So yeah, usually I have a variety of people. So I was seeing birth to death, basically. So anywhere in between, like a newborn to 105-year-old. So in a primary care setting, it's very diverse from what I could do from day to day. So some days I'm doing just a lot of physicals and have a pap smear and cervical cancer screening, like 3 in a day. And some days I'm just doing like diabetes and some skin removals and things like that. But for sort of a standard check-in, a lot of times I'll open with that question of like, what's new since I saw you last? And won't even bring up the diabetes question or the hypertension question, because it's a lot of lifestyle interventions that are leading to management of these things. And then, yeah, kind of...
go from there.
Goes from
right,
there.
And, right. And you... So there's what you learned in school, but I've always known you to be a very voracious learner and very much interested in being self-taught. And you say that really every commute you do from your home to work, you're listening to Peter Attia podcast. You're kind of like, you were just talking about you just read Breath. Like,
yeah.
What's your view of all that you are learning, you know, post school? You know, it seems like this is a lifelong journey for you in health and understanding how it all interconnects.
Yeah, in school, it's very much learn this. This is what you need to know in order to prescribe this. And yeah, very top-down approach of just memorize these things. And I'm very much, I need to know the pathway of how this works and why I'm doing this. And because that's just how it's going to be planted in my brain for what to do for people. So beyond just the regular schooling for nurse practitioner, I've definitely got very into Peter Attia during COVID and had the time to do that. So either his podcast or Being Well, which I think I've sent you a link to before, with Forrest Hansen and Dr. Rick Hansen. It depends on how I'm feeling. So actually it depends a lot on my menstrual cycle.
Mm-hmm. Wait. So depending on your menstrual yeah. cycle, you'll listen to either Peter Attia or Rick Hansen.
Yeah.
If you need a bit softer of a voice, you'll listen to Rick and Forrest. And then if you're ready, you're like, let's go hard. Yeah. We're going to go hunting. We're going to kill some axis deer. And I'm going to tell you how it interacts with your blood.
Yeah. So if I'm feeling up for like absorbing a lot of like rich and dense information, I'll be listening to Peter Attia on the way to work. If I'm feeling more mellow and low energy and kind of, it's more emotional for me, the second half of my cycle, I'll listen to Being Well on the way to work and kind of get more insight into how I'm feeling and how others around me are feeling. And actually Being Well has been helpful for different ways to ask questions for patients, because it's all about emotional well-being and being in primary care. That is a lot of what we do, is trying to help people's mental health as well as physical health, because you obviously can't get away from one or the other.
Sure. Yeah, I've had Rick and Peter on this podcast, and both are incredibly intelligent. And you know, Peter comes from background of surgery and working in really high intensity hospital environments. And Rick, I think, has done such a good job bridging the gap between mindfulness and science. He wrote Neurodharma and a number of other books about how meditation and mindfulness impacts the brain. And I think about that all the time now. Like if I'm feeling bad, or if I'm like, God, I can't remember shit today, I'm like, whoa, I didn't get a good night's sleep and my hippocampus probably isn't working as effectively as it should. But it's cool that you've taken the approach to listening to both of those voices. So you before this, you were just mentioning your menstrual cycle, and you said that Cake, I don't know if you know you're just mentioning your menstrual cycle. I don't know but you said one thing that you wanted to talk about in this podcast was anemia in women and how that can show up and kind of what you, I'll give you the floor here, but it's something I know very little about and figured it would be worth knowing more about.
So I guess I'll preface that for the last 4 years, it was the beginning of my practice as a nurse practitioner. So I have been learning a lot in practice, because I think like the first 5 years are said to be a large learning curve in terms of how you are and what you know in practice for nurse practitioners, especially because we don't go through a residency like medical doctors. So post-school and post our clinicals during school, we go straight into it. And at least in Maine, we're supervised for 2 years under a doctor and then can work independently. But I feel like, I guess, I don't know if I said this exactly before, but I learn a lot from my patients in terms of them asking me questions about different things about their health that a lot of times we weren't taught in school.
So what are examples of that?
Getting more into, like, a lot of times it's supplements, because some of them know that I'm more open to researching and discussing supplements and what can be used. So K2 was probably one of the first things that one of my patients asked me, and I was like, I don't actually know like what to recommend for you. And went and investigated vitamin K2 for supporting treatment of osteopenia and osteoporosis, and found that in the Japanese osteoporosis guidelines, K2 90 micrograms daily is one of the recommended treatments for osteoporosis.
What is osteoporosis?
It's a thought of as like a brittling of the bones, but it's your bones basically become less dense. Often the highest risks are for females post-menopause, and thin-framed Asian women like myself are very high risk. But oftentimes it starts much earlier. Like, you're going to build the most bone in your body, especially for a female in your 20s. So a lot of like resistance weight training exercise is really good for building that. But K2 should be something that we produce in our gut. But oftentimes, like, there's so much dysbiosis in our world nowadays that a lot of us probably aren't producing enough.
What's dysbiosis? this is going to happen a lot in this podcast. Get ready.
It's an over and under abundance of bacteria and fungus in our gut.
Great.
Keep it as simple.
This is great.
Yeah, as possible.
Okay, so 8A12?
K2.
K2,
yeah.
K2.
So that was one of the first...
So K2 is a supplement that is recommended.
It is a supplement, but it's also something that your body can produce its own.
Okay.
But is, yeah.
Okay.
Part of what can be essential for... building strong bones because it helps guide calcium to the bones. But I guess that's just one example of learning through patients of a couple years ago, being someone asking me about that.
Okay.
And I guess that's the beauty of having a more open conversation with patients is a lot of patients have said, like, I feel comfortable asking you questions. Whereas I went to my specialist and they have 5 minutes with patients sometimes, and
right, so
there's no conversation that goes on. It's a lot of,
right, okay,
this is what needs to be done. But for anemia, I think the trick with anemia that I've noticed with especially adolescent females who are menstruating is that they're having such a heavy period, and I didn't realize it. As a fairly normal menstruating female in terms of flow, there are a lot of adolescents that I came across that are having heavy periods. And that's not usually why they're coming in. I feel like a lot of the females I talked to, is maybe they're just like regular check-in, their annual check-in, or they were coming in for anxiety. Or they were coming in for dizziness or something like that. But it's a very essential question, at least for me, is like, what is going on with your cycle? Because so much in terms of like mood, focus, energy involves a female cycle. And so a lot of them would say yes to the heavy bleeding. And with heavy bleeding, you're losing blood. And when you lose that much blood, you're not going to be able to keep the iron because our body recycles iron in order to use it again and make more red blood cells. So when you're losing that much iron monthly for bleeding 7 days, 10 days out of the month or every 28 days, a lot of adolescents are becoming iron deficient. And the biggest trick, I think, is that I've stopped relying just on like a CBC or a complete blood count initially and have just gone straight to doing an iron panel because a lot of times their body is still adapting really well and their CBC will look normal. So they won't have anemia. Their red blood cells will be the correct size, but their iron is just extremely deficient. Their iron panel and their ferritin, their iron storage is very, very low, and that's what's adding a lot to their symptoms of dizziness, to anxiety, to not being able to focus in school, to so many different things. And so I feel like that is something that's really important, that because normally we don't check a lot of blood panels on kids or adolescents because we assume them to be healthy young young individuals.
So what can females do when they're in that kind of situation? Do you have any recommendations?
Well,
first get an iron panel.
Yeah, get an iron panel, especially for adolescents and young females that are having a lot of anxiety, depression, dizziness especially, or just feeling extremely run down with their menstrual cycle. Because there's so many things in our environment that are hormone disruptors in terms of what we eat, makeup, things like that. Now things in the water that can affect hormones.
Right, we'll get to that.
Yeah, and make them heavier cycle. But iron supplementation and in a Western or like in a regular office, it would often be put on this birth control to regulate your cycle. And sometimes that is the best option for people. I would say that like that's not what I chose. So a lot of learning about health has also been learning about my own health. And so I would also recommend getting to know your cycle better. So I got into charting and keeping track of a menstrual cycle and what my hormonal pattern is like throughout a cycle, so I could know better how to support myself in terms of when I can be more adventurous and push myself and when I really need to relax and allow my body to rest and recuperate.
So are you tracking that like a chocolate advent calendar or something?
Yeah. So I used to be, when I first started doing it, I would paper chart it. So learned from a fertility awareness practitioner how to chart my cycle, track temperature and cervical fluid and positioning and mood and all that kind of stuff on a paper chart that you can clearly see like how you're moving through it. And then after a couple years, kind of moved away from that and just you just kind of notice and know. And now it's made a little bit easier because I use an Oura ring and that tracks my temperature, which is super helpful. And they've started using a period app, but I haven't gone to that yet because I just feel like now I just know my cycle more. It's more intuitive.
Right.
But that I feel like that's a way for people to understand a little bit better.
Yeah, what they're doing.
Yeah.
Totally. I just got my first blood panel ever. Yay me. I was just dealing with some depression and was like, I wonder if this has anything to do with deficiencies. Turns out it doesn't. I'm just sad.
Yeah.
Healthy and sad can also happen. But it was great to see. I think that slowly, you know, and a lot of my health literacy happened over the past few years when I took the job at Mudwater, because so much of what they were all about is, how do you feel when you don't have coffee, right? And from there, what's your mind like, right? Those are the big questions. What's your mind like generally? How is your sleep? Because I think that really is the most honest argument of Mudwater, is that coffee can really fuck up sleep for a lot of people, and that, as you know, then has this cascade of tertiary effects. But through that, like, they gave all their employees Oura rings. It was the first time ever worn that. Yeah, it was very cultish. one ring to rule them all. Our friend Shane just did some Oura ring, like, freaking Captain Planet.
I mean, that is, when COVID hit, I was like, I need to be more serious about my health. Because there's ways that you can protect yourself. But,
yeah,
like, one of the biggest things for health is sleep. So shortly after COVID started, got start listening to Peter Attia
totally.
Got an Oura Ring.
And it just makes life less confusing, because for the longest time, I had no idea why I would be in a good mood or why I would be in a bad mood, why I could sit down sometimes and work for hours. I mean, all throughout growing up, I had a bagel and cream cheese and a big ass bowl of Panda Puffs every morning at 8 a.m. Before I was hungry, I was just like, this is what you do. Like, you have breakfast. And it wasn't until like 5 years ago that I was like, I'm not hungry until like noon. It's bullshit. And it's great. Yeah. It's super empowering, which is why I love learning about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, so that's the really interesting thing that I like about the Oura Ring is the heart rate variability, because I can clearly, very, very clearly see on my cycle after I hit ovulation, my heart rate variability drops. It's just inevitable.
Wow.
Like, sometimes it's more drastic than other times, but I will be at like 80 to 100 pre-ovulation, and then I hit my luteal phase and it's down in like the 40s to 70s.
What's a luteal phase?
It's the second half of your menstrual cycle after ovulation.
Okay. You were mentioning, let's get straight into PFAS.
PFAS, yeah.
PFAS. PFAS.
PFOA.
PFAS. FIFA soccer.
Yeah.
Because it's all the rage right now. My friend just told me about PFAS and said we shouldn't be drinking LaCroix bubbly water. This is bullshit. I love LaCroix. I don't believe it. It's fake news. Tell me what's going on with this, because it does seem like a legitimate environmental concern.
So PFAS, or per and polyfluoroalkyl substances, are extremely pervasive through our life, and every single human has some level of PFAS or PFOA in their body at this point, unless you are living on a mountain with a reliable water source and don't interact with anything that has been bought or manufactured in the last 20, 30 years.
Which is you.
No, definitely not.
Living out on that farm, which we'll talk about.
It has become more and more apparent in recent years, just how pervasive these chemicals are. And a big, I guess this is something that I started learning from patients as well, is had a lot of patients that were exposed to very high levels of PFAS. 'Cause in the state of Maine in the 80s and 90s, they were, the state was basically giving sludge or bio waste and to farms to spread on fields and use as fertilizer. But the accumulation of human waste and sewage waste that comes out of manufacturers who used PFAS-like chemicals gets concentrated in the sludge and then is spread all over the fields that people are then consuming for food and corn and things like that.
What do manufacturers use PFAS for?
Anything that they want to have less friction or be like water repellent. So the most like shocking thing is like everyone's Gore-Tex.
It's like, damn it.
Yeah. So it's like the most convenient molecule ever, because it just makes our life really, really easy. It's like the nonstick pans, the water repellent clothing, used also in like a firefighting foam and things like that. Used a lot on what's it called when you come on to tarmac? Yeah.
Sure.
So a lot of it's everywhere. So anything that's a paper product that has like a sheen or shine on it, usually will have some PFAS chemical on it. So it's one of those things that every couple years more and more of the chemicals will be banned, but it's like now there's like thousands of different types of chemicals that are in this class. So you can kind of just keep making newer and newer PFAS chemicals to go beyond the regulations from before. But it was something that patients in the community were exposed to very, very high levels of, because there are manufacturers around and there was sludge placed in the field. So extremely, extremely devastating for the community that I've been working in, because people are living off their land. And that's why you live in Maine.
Right.
Why a lot of people live in Maine is to have land and grow your own food, grow your own animals, and be able to sustain. But a lot of having the sludge spread on their field for hay also, then absorbed into the soil, absorbed into the groundwater, and then you're watering things with PFAS water, you're showering, drinking PFAS, and your vegetables have PFAS in them, some more than others, depending on the type. And your animals then are testing positive for PFAS, which they found out. Yeah.
Okay. And what do PFAS do to humans?
So it's one of those things that we need more research.
Okay. Love that.
We need more research because there's no causal relationship as of right now, but there are lots of indicators that is affecting people's liver. It's a raising cholesterol. It's raising liver enzymes, which is kind of a signal that your liver is having a hard time. It's affecting kidney health. It's decreasing birth weights. It's decreasing possibly the efficacy of immunizations. It's it's a hormone endocrine disruptor. There are probably a million other things that I'm forgetting right now. Oh, just in general, immune health. Yeah. That goes into the vaccine response.
Okay, I'm scared. That's enough. Cool. Right on.
And cancers is another big one, because it can concentrate in various areas. And that's sort of from word of mouth in terms of people who were part of this lawsuit that has started in Maine. That's sort of where it started, is a doctor in the area. People on his street were coming down with cancers, and it's like, why is this happening? Why are so many people getting all of these types of cancers? Like, this shouldn't be this high of a rate. So there's lawsuit going on. I think led by Aaron Brockovich in the Fairfield area, and I think they've expanded so that people can join on as part of the lawsuit if they had sludge spread on their land in the 80s and 90s and have test positive for PFAS in their water.
Wow. So that's where it's normally, that's where it's showing up. So if you're wearing Gore-Tex, are PFAS dangerous to you? Or is it more highly concentrated in that there's biohazard or bio waste from companies that are making this stuff that they want to get rid of, that they have mixed into fertilizers and then given to farms? Is that the story?
It's so highest risks are people who are working in those manufacturing jobs and are exposed to the chemicals all day, and water sources seem to be the highest. So like drinking water with PFAS in it. It's supposedly not that much of a transdermal effect, or doesn't get absorbed through your skin that much. So like interacting one-on-one with it, but this is all sort of like, we will know in the future, but
right.
Highest risks are occupational hazard. And then if you are consuming a lot of water or food or products that have a lot of PFAS in it.
Wow. So. Okay. Is there anything we can do to just hunker down and wait and find your own water source?
So there are more. It's filtering your water.
Filtering your water.
Filtering your water. Activated carbon is supposed to be one of the ways to
get it out.
Yeah. So the state of Maine, for people who have gotten their water tested and have high levels, is have been getting filters put in their home so that they have a whole home system. But just like, if you want to test, because it's not just a Maine thing, it's all over the country. Yeah. And now it's one of those things that once you like start reading about it, then it's just going to pop up on like every news feed.
Right. So now, yeah, that's like you're in a PFAS echo chamber.
Yeah, exactly. So it's all over. But there is a company, Cyclopure. I obviously don't have any affiliation with them, but there was activists at Common Ground Fair in Unity, Maine, which is an annual fair as part of Maine Organic Farming and Gardening Association. There was someone there giving out information, and Cyclopure is a company that does PFAS testing for about 50 PFAS chemicals, and it's only about like $80.
How do you spell that?
Which one?
Cyclopure?
Yeah.
Cyclopure?
Yeah.
Okay.
They do water testing, which seems the most accessible compared to a lot of water testing companies. It could be like a couple hundred dollars to get it done. And even the people that we use to like service our well, I asked them about it and they're like, I don't know about that. And it's like, shoot.
Right.
like everyone needs to know about this.
Right.
But yeah, so that's one way to protect yourself and just trying to decrease the amount of products that we're buying and consuming that have PFAS-like chemicals. So fast food is also a big...
PFAS?
Yes.
Really?
Because of the anything that you buy that's greasy, you don't want the grease to like... absorb into the paper and then absorb into your hand and then get all over.
So it's the non-stick.
It's the non-stick shiny French fry container that is just covered in PFAS. Yeah. So it's one of those things that it's like, yeah.
Yesterday I went into Taco Bell. Haven't done this in years. I went into Taco Bell and I was like, ooh, I want to get a 7-layer burrito. I used to get those things all the time. And I want a choco taco. I want an ice cream choco taco. Turns out they have neither. They no longer make the 7-layer burrito. They no longer make a choco taco. And they make you order at a fucking kiosk that is digital. And you type in what you want, type in add-ons, review order, pay. I got halfway through it, and I was like, fuck this, I'm out. I go to Taco Bell because I don't want to think.
Yeah.
I want to say number one. I can go 1 to 6, nothing else. And I don't want to think when I mean they're going to lose so much money off this new kiosk thing. I fucking hope they do. Really made me mad. And they have PFAS.
yeah. Yes.
So, do you have many patients that come in for black mold issues? And do you know anything about that?
No, but I'm always suspicious. But I have been doing functional medicine like training programs, but haven't gotten deeply into the world of mold and detoxification, kind of just general detox. But, I'm definitely not an expert in mold detoxification, but I'm always highly suspicious because I think not necessarily black mold, but other mold was part of my own health issues going through grad school.
Really?
You just put mold on top of stress and you get a whole...
You're a moldy, stressed out yeah. person.
You get a great situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a big issue in California. I know multiple friends that have had chronic health issues from mold. A friend of mine, this girl just had to move out of her house because like the wall caved in. Turns out it was just like black mold behind the whole wall.
Yeah,
no worries if you don't know more about that. What I want to hear a bit more about your health issues in school. And then let's get to the farm and kind of this whole story about you and where you are now. So tell me about your health issues in school.
So I would say that I realized when I started practicing that a lot of being interested in medicine and health and humans is also my own curiosity to heal myself, and And thank you for all the coworkers who always said, you got to take care of yourself so you can take care of others, because it's definitely, definitely true. In school, I started experiencing idiopathic urticaria, or hives, for an unknown reason, but unknown reason is usually stress. basically just something that we can't pinpoint for causing the hives, and pretty debilitating eczema, which I'd had as an infant, but wasn't really a major part of my life until grad school. Definitely think that the old building in Portland, Maine that I lived in had mold, because it started becoming very apparent, just like
right
on the walls and in the clothing and things like that. And that was sort of my journey, I guess, into not specifically functional medicine at that time, but just wanting a better answer for my own health issues. I guess it started much earlier, even with my menstrual cycle, of being told like, okay, you've slightly irregular cycle, doesn't come all the time. We're going to put you on oral contraceptive pill, because that's kind of the go-to. But found that like tracking my cycle, acupuncture and herbs were a much better option for me, because then I got to have a more regular cycle and not be on oral birth control, which has its own issues, but is also a great option for some people, and it works really well for some people and not for others. So I'm definitely not an absolutist in any regard.
That's great. Yeah, you're smart.
And so having hives all over your body that itch and irritate and make you feel extremely uncomfortable and can't sleep at night and can't breathe, really. And that's why I was, think a lot of mold, exacerbated by food sensitivities, and probably major dysbiosis from a lot of antibiotics in my childhood, kind of came to a head and just exploded into this urticaria. So you go to the doctor, I went to an acupuncturist, went to an allergist, and went to a dermatologist, and kind of the ultimate answers for allergist and dermatologist was you should go on Humira.
What's Humira?
It's a biologic that is, it's an UMAB. I don't actually remember the exact name of it, but...
Are we speaking English anymore?
it's a medication that you can take, and it can help. It's one of the treatments for idiopathic urticaria that's a medication, and it's like one of those medications that's like a thousand or a couple thousand, probably at the time, dollars a month to get an injection once a month. And then I was like, that's not really the option for me, like, yeah. So decided to start doing my own research, and one of the good things about being in nursing school and is that you have projects for various classes, and one of my favorite classes was immunology. It was actually a biology course, but I did a project on histamine intolerance, and that kind of opened the door for me of just dysbiosis and why is histamine, which is a lot of times causing the urticaria, or you think of like an antihistamine, like
is urticaria
Benadryl.
Is that hives?
That's
urticaria.
Hives, yeah. Okay. You think of like Benadryl as like the old classic antihistamine, like you get allergies and you take a Benadryl. Wouldn't recommend that now because it's super sedating, but that's, I guess, yeah, okay, how most people know histamine. But did a project on that and started diving deeper into like foods that can increase histamine, and ultimately what has helped me a lot is being gluten-free, dairy-free. That's like the baseline.
Really?
And yeah, just getting back to practices that decrease stress, and my partner's been amazing in supporting me and eating gluten-free, dairy-free, and just foods that don't have a lot of bad oils in them.
Really?
So that,
so you found that that's what was causing the
and
the
it was
hives.
And we also moved out of that apartment, so I think that was like instantly feeling better. So it's like it's stress, but there's obviously something that triggered it, and like I think the mold and stress were like the major triggers that added to it, which on top of the food sensitivities that I have.
So I used to have a housemate that had celiac disease, and she couldn't have any gluten.
Yeah.
And it was a real issue for her. I feel like if she had it, you know, it was serious.
Major immune response.
Serious that, yep. stuff. Yeah. Is what you were having a kind of lesser form of celiac, or is it a completely different thing?
It's not completely different, but it's not exactly the same. Okay. Yeah, so it's not an antibody immune response like celiac disease, where your body is actually going to attack the intestines and cause a large amount of inflammation, and like people can get fevers and serious gut issues where they're really not absorbing anything with celiac disease. And it is a major thing to completely avoid gluten, because it's just devastating.
You can't live.
So like gluten sensitivities and intolerances are a lesser degree, so a lot of people just can't deal with gliadin, a compound that's in gluten products, and it can create a immune response in people who don't have celiac disease. But celiac disease, even in and of itself, is one of those things that can be triggered early on in someone's life, or it can be a perfect storm that occurs later, being an autoimmune disease that basically you have a predisposition genetically, and then something triggers it to all cascade, and basically your immune system is telling you no, like we're not going to deal with this. So it's not that straightforward. So even like people in their like 70s that I've had as patients who diagnosed with celiac disease and like confirmed with biopsy on a scope to go to their small intestines and see what was there. Like, how do you make it until you're 70 to then be diagnosed? Like, so it was to a lesser degree, they had all of the symptoms of celiac disease. So it's not just like an early on thing. But so a lot of people have sensitivities to gluten, but it doesn't manifest as, it's not celiac disease. Does that sort of answer?
Yeah, it does. So you cut that out. And did you do any other testing on yourself? Because so one thing that I want to talk about here is that I think most people listening to this podcast will have some kind of health issue. They've gone through something that is mysterious.
Yeah.
Right. It's not a fractured arm. It's like, I just don't know.
And that's like everything.
That's everything, right?
Yeah. I feel like medicine is great at surgeries and things that are very straightforward. And I tell my patients often, I was like, we're really good at like heart attacks. We're really so good at heart attacks now. People are surviving heart attacks and doing really well.
Yeah. If I freaking snap my femur, don't hold a candle over me and start praying.
Yeah. If you break your leg, it's like, we're so good at that. But we're not good at like dysbiosis and like mold and things like that. People are getting better and better, and that's where I feel like why I've gotten into functional medicine, because those questions and those issues and health concerns are being more and more answered, and there's people all over that are able to help people with those issues. But it's like, in most people, if you go to your primary care, it's not going to be a topic that usually gets addressed. But that's usually, there's something going on when there's this mysterious health issue and you just really have no idea what it is. But a lot of times it comes down to stress.
Sorry, The chicken was killing me on that. We live right next to it, this spot we're in Santa Cruz has a chicken coop, and then there's a assisted living facility across the canyon.
Oh, really?
for people with mental health issues.
That's
so
cool.
So you'll hear like a chicken or like the random like yeah. Oh my god,
it's gonna be a nice place to
it's
be.
It's really nice. What would you, so if someone has a mysterious ailment, what would you recommend be the questions that they ask themselves, like you did, right? Like, I have, whether it's hives, whether it's chronic lethargy, whether it's, you know, like it could be any one of these mysterious ailments that you're talking about, that is most of it that currently Western medicine is not very good at pinpointing. I have a similar view on medicine, though much less of an expert on it. I think that we're so good at acute issues like fractures, heart attacks, but we tend to offer a lot of blunt instruments to more complex and nuanced issues, which involve the body and the brain, and require a lot of inquiry into the self and a kind of path to figure out what is best for you, because what might be best for you is not best for someone else. So you went through this your own thing with hives, with potential mold. If someone has a mysterious ailment, what do you think are the steps that they should take to try and zero in on what that is?
That's a great question. Definitely would go back to sleep as one of the primary things. Sleep and glucose regulation.
Okay.
Are huge. Am I getting enough sleep? Am I getting enough good sleep? Because once your sleep is affected, then your sugar levels are affected, and then hormones can be affected, and then energy and thyroid and can be affected. So it's one of those, definitely a place to start that can fix a lot of issues, like you said, for yourself. You definitely notice when sleep goes well and sleep doesn't go well. But then there's like all of us who are now wearing Oura Ring and know how good or bad our sleep is. If you don't, then just assuming that if you set aside like 7 hours to be in bed, you're not sleeping 7 hours. Mm. So trying to get to at least 7 or 8 hours of sleep, which unfortunately for a lot of people is not possible. And that's like one of the most devastating, is a very strong word, but that's kind of how I feel, is like overnight shifts are horrible for people's healths. Mm. Because it's so disruptive to your sleep wake cycle and your blood glucose control. And
yeah, DJs, they just get destroyed. and as far as glucose, yeah. Sorry, was there something else you wanted to say on sleep?
I need to strip it down.
Yeah, it's starting to get out here. You can close that little window thing.
Oh, perfect.
There, boom. The sun has arrived. We got sleep. So glucose.
So glucose, and also just like, how does your body feel? Because I feel like that is something that I have to start to pinpoint. And I may be one of those people that's a little bit like oversensitive and undersensitive in some ways, just like being someone who...
Well, you're also overly aware of it.
Yeah.
Right?
So
it's like once you see the blue car that you want, you see it everywhere.
Yeah. but I guess that's where like sort of mindfulness practices can be helpful, in just noticing body sensations.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I'm very sensitive to like food type things and compounds and stimulants of any sort. Like, I'm a don't drink caffeine after 10 a.m. person, because it disrupts my sleep so much. But for me, it was very much like, hey, how do I feel? And for histamine and inflammation in the body particularly, it can be a pretty pervasive feeling, which people don't understand a lot of times, of feeling like I'm having an allergy attack, but I just ate something that made my chest feel heavy, that made my nose and eyes start watering, that made me feel like my face is just under extreme pressure. And that was the extreme when I was like living in that apartment in Portland. But yeah, like how is my body responding to different situations? And so that may be like a food thing, but it may also be like a situational thing where you're interacting with someone or something. And
right, I hate my boss. He's giving me hives. That kind of thing.
Yes, yeah, like, yeah, I had a patient be like, "This I know this is due to stress from work right now. I'm getting hives," and yeah,
right,
yeah. So that's definitely something to look out for, is like, how is my body? And for some people, it may just be an anxiety response that comes on when they're in a situation with someone, or an anxiety feeling when you drink or eat something. Yeah, like, how does my body feel? And for me, alcohol was a very extreme response early on. It's like, I feel horrible.
Really?
When I drink alcohol. Like, absolutely horrible when I drink alcohol. So it's just like one of those things that I don't do, because my body just doesn't like it, and it causes so much inflammation in my body that it's not worth it at all.
Does that have, do Asian people have different, tend to have that, or am I just making shit now?
I think that is true. I always forget exactly which enzyme it is, but there is an enzyme that certain Asian populations don't have, that you don't break down alcohol as well, but I forget which one it is.
Right. So when it comes to glucose, let's just burn a couple calories on glucose right now, because I want to know a bit more about like what is that, and how should people understand glucose in their own bodies?
Glucose is basically just sugar. Blood sugar is how people often refer to it. And it's always in our bodies. We need it. And our body has different ways of having a semi-steady state of blood glucose. And it's basically when it gets too high, people get the diagnosis of diabetes. But oftentimes the process of managing glucose becomes dysregulated before your sugar levels are chronically high. And so that's where it's kind of more nuanced. And if you're feeling off, it may be because you are having glucose issues, but you don't have diabetes, you don't even have pre-diabetes, but your body is having a difficult time, an overreaction or an underreaction to when you absorb glucose through your nutrition, carbohydrate meals, or when your liver makes more glucose available for you to use. So
what are things that people could do? Would that just be experimenting with diets, experimenting with more or less carbohydrates? Maybe getting a Dexcom monitor.
Sleep is one of the best things for regulating blood glucose, and then exercise and just proteins and fats. I'm not a heavy keto person. I guess I'm pretty moderate in most ways, but proteins and fats eaten first in meals, and limiting carbs is a good way to not have your blood glucose spike.
Eating proteins and fast first.
Yeah.
Okay. That will help you keep your sugar levels more
base. And fiber is great for that. So
no more Dunkin' Donuts first thing in the morning.
Exactly. So it's something that an easy way to sort of explain it is you have a glass of apple juice and you have an apple and they have equal amounts of sugar in them, but you drink the apple juice and it absorbs really quickly into your bloodstream. And so you get a pretty intense spike of blood glucose or blood sugar level. And your body has to deal with that somehow. So your body will release insulin to bring the glucose levels back down by telling your muscles, please absorb this glucose and store it away. If you eat the apple instead, then there's fiber along with the sugar, so it's absorbed slower, and then your body doesn't have as intense of a spike in sugar level, so your body doesn't have to as aggressively put out insulin to deal with that sugar spike.
Okay, that was a great example.
That is something I say extremely often. So yeah, for me, those sorts of things are really helpful for patients to understand, because it's easy to say like, don't eat sugar.
Right. Yeah. Right. But the drinking of the sugar happens.
Probably one of my biggest things is don't drink sugar. Just don't do it.
Right.
It can make a huge difference for people's health and regulating blood sugars if you just don't drink it.
So that involves apple juice, orange juice, soda, alcohol.
Coffee with lots of sugar, tea with lots of sugar. Yeah, anything. People drink a lot of very strange things.
Mm. What else would be on the... Because I like this. Like the easy access. Here's the thing. Peter Attia's podcasts are too much for me.
That's why I love them.
You're the conduit to mortals like me. So I want to try little things in my life that potentially make me feel better. And cutting out drinking sugar is, I think, a great one that I will try.
I'll give that to my mom as well. She is a big don't drink your calories. Don't drink your calories. There is a lot of delicious food that out there that you can eat and get a lot of nutrients from. And
okay, this is going to be a hard one for me, and I might tell you to leave if you give the wrong answer. What about kombucha?
Oh. I don't know. Test it on yourself. So that's the other thing, is that other people, like, everyone reacts differently. And that's kind of the beauty of like Dexcom and Freestyle Libres and things like that, and why I wish every person with diabetes could have it. For me, like coming from Maine and working in an underserved population, I just need people with diabetes to have a Dexcom. Like, that's like one of my biggest frustrations, is that it's not accessible to people in Maine right now under a lot of insurance companies to get that sort of blood glucose monitoring. Whereas in California, I feel like it's easily accessible to get that.
Dexcom is a little patch, looks like a Band-Aid. They stick it in your arm,
yeah,
and you can then in real time see your blood glucose levels on your phone.
Yeah.
Which I did it for 2 months, and that was the big thing. I was like, holy shit, drinking sugar spikes this so much more even than eating a pastry or something like that. It's just a fun thing to do, you know, starting to play scientist on yourself.
Yeah, I guess this is where I'm like, we just need, I need patients with diabetes to have
Dexcoms.
Yeah. Even people who aren't on insulin. So that's like one of the big barriers in Maine, is you have to like be on insulin to have one of these constant glucose monitors. And like, I want to keep people off insulin. And that's why it would be very helpful, because no one wants to poke their finger 4 times a day, 5 times a day to like get readings when you wake up, before meals, after meals, when you go to sleep, things like that. No one wants to do that.
Right. Is that all that the poking finger thing is doing? It's just giving you readings?
It's giving you a blood glucose level, yeah.
Right. Oh, wow. So you could do away with all of that with a Dexcom.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And you get warnings for highs and lows. Mm. But it's also like the trending of it's similar to like a tracking your menstrual cycle. You can get daily trends. So like people will have different rhythms throughout the day of when their levels will be higher and lower, and everyone's a little bit different. Some people spike in the middle of the night, some people spike during the day or just with meals, but it's really like a personal rhythm for people in terms of their glucose levels, because it has to do a lot with hormones.
Sorry, keep going. I just had a question and I lost it. I just lost it. Let's talk about, so alcohol. Do you not drink alcohol? No alcohol. That's why you're so lame. KK, you've gotten so much lame since I saw you last.
I probably wasn't drinking alcohol.
I know. when did you make that decision, and did you decide to go no alcohol completely?
When I started practicing Ashtanga.
Mm. Okay.
It was when you practice Ashtanga Sunday morning after dancing and drinking alcohol, it's extremely uncomfortable.
What's Ashtanga?
Ashtanga is a form
that,
of...
It's like that drink that you drink that in the Amazon that like makes you really high and you see like dragons. People talk about seeing Mother Ashtanga. Is that what it is?
No.
You go to the Sacred Valley and... Okay.
No. But it is a form of vinyasa yoga. Yeah.
Okay. And you've been practicing that for a long time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. 2013, I think.
That was the real moment. That was the crux where you're like, I can't do this anymore.
It's one of those body things for me. I'd already had 3 knee surgeries.
And, I remember that, yeah.
And I love dancing more than anything else. And so basically I just want to be able to dance.
Right.
is my whole goal. And so if you go out, or if I went out dancing Saturday night and had some alcohol and then went to Ashtanga Sunday morning, then I was in so much pain. My joints couldn't flex because I was still rehabbing from my MCL reconstruction, MCL and ACL reconstruction. So I just realized that if I didn't drink alcohol at all Saturday night, then Sunday morning I would feel a million times better. I would be able to breathe better. My joints didn't hurt and I just felt amazing versus just like being in pain. And
yeah. And then did you just say, I'm not going to drink alcohol ever again?
I mean, it was a gradual process.
It was.
My husband makes fun of me because I often forget all the things that I tell myself I'm not going to do. And then like, oh, I can eat that. And right, he's like, and then I turn into a snotty monster.
Right. Always comes at the end of the day.
Yeah.
After a long, stressful day.
Yeah. It was definitely one of those things of like, oh, I could try that again. But then eventually it was like, no,
it's
this
not
is,
party.
It's not worth it. And I guess that's, for me, that's like a easy thing. Or easier thing for me to say, like, drinking socially is not worth it at all. Like, I feel so much better when I don't drink alcohol. Like, I just don't, yeah. The enjoyment of having a beer or a glass of wine isn't there for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you, sister. I've done 2 years of no alcohol. I did a year off during COVID. Because I was like, I'm not getting this shit and I'm not going to get sick. And the only times that I really get sick are when I drink alcohol.
Yeah.
So I did a 1 year no alcohol, and then just recently then went back on drinking again, and then was like, okay, I want to, it makes it, if I am hungover, writing is so hard. Like that's, I would say that that's been the biggest like secondary reason is that it's a very like fragile space to be in, to for me to be able to write well, like to the to what I feel is my potential. And there's a lot of things that I can do a little hungover or just at like 70% fine, like driving, like moving boxes, right? Yeah. Like whatever that, but there are some things that I really like to do that make the difference between me being able to have a career at them and not, or being very mediocre at them or being better. And I, yeah, it's a weird thing because nowadays I don't have this like I don't drink thing, and I so often will do that what you're talking about where I'm like, yeah, I don't really drink, and then it'll be like, whoo, that was a long stressful day, and then I'll have two beers.
See, I would yeah,
you can't do that.
That would never be a reflex for me at this point, but
right,
yeah.
So how'd you get over that?
I just
strong,
honestly, like,
just
no,
will.
it's definitely,
I'm just
it's
better than you.
It's more just like, I feel awful.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
I,
me too.
I, yeah.
No, me too. Me too. I just still, you just love yourself more than I do. You think you deserve it more than I deserve the life you want. Yeah.
That may be part of early training,
mm-hmm,
as a gymnast, probably, like,
right,
yeah, like
just and that discipline.
And I guess I would say with Ashtanga as well, it's like a part of it is a purification, like that is a lot of
what you're doing in,
yeah,
the yoga
purification of body and mind, and it's a lot of like peeling back layers of what's really there, and like alcohol is not a part of any of that for me.
What do you mean by peeling back layers of what's not really there? What is that? Tell me about that process.
It's an hour to 2 hours of just breathing and moving, and during that time there's thoughts that come up. And then you go back to breathing and moving, or you just continue breathing and moving. So it's like a moving meditation, which is easier for me. Gone in and out of seated meditation. But for me, Ashtanga is like, works really well for me.
Right.
So yeah, just observing thoughts that come up when you're practicing is just one way. Acknowledging thoughts and
right,
not becoming attached to what they are and what's going on in your mind.
I've known you for quite some time, and I've always known you to be very comfortable living to the beat of your own drum and doing things that are maybe, like, I met you, I think, when I was a sophomore in high school, and you were always very comfortable being odd. Like, and I mean that as a supreme compliment. Like, you were very centered in your oddness and whatever it is that you wanted
to
do.
I'm curious
to
as to what that was.
I just, you, just the energy. Like, yeah, your energy was just always, it was very inquisitive. You would just, you never seemed as susceptible to cultural trends, which are, and high school trends, which I think are really difficult to do when you're 15 years old and don't really even know yourself, to be able to just be like, no, that's not for me. I'm going to go like ecstatic dance on the beach by myself for 3 hours while everyone else is like at a house party. You should party too, but do you recognize that in yourself?
Yeah, I guess like I enjoyed going out dancing and just going on mate versus taking drugs. Like, yeah, I guess that would be an example, like later post high school, like go to San Francisco and like go dancing all night. I'm just going to drink a lot of mate.
Right.
Like, yeah. And then be the person driving home.
Right.
So.
What does that conversation sound like with yourself if you feel any sort of acting from social pressure versus acting from yourself?
I don't think about it.
You don't think about
it? Yeah. I feel like I'm very susceptible to social pressure like everybody else, I feel like, but I guess I don't. Yeah.
Not as susceptible, maybe.
I don't know. I guess I guess I like being comfortable so much.
So
like,
it's
very much is like a body sensation for me. Like even like growing up, like I only want to wear comfortable clothing. Like in elementary school, like I'm not going to wear that dress that is made out of who knows what and feels absolutely awful on my body. Like I want to feel comfortable, mainly so I can play like wall ball with the boys.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's always just been like, I want to be free to be able to do what I want to do in any situation. And a lot of times that's being like in the right mind to take care of things.
That's super cool. I like the way that it's paradoxical in a sense, because there's a short amount of discomfort to attain a large level of comfort, right? Like I'm going to wear my own clothes, or I'm going to not drink. There is a almost like a membrane of discomfort that you might not even feel anymore, but bounces most people off to be like, okay, well, I'm going to wear the thing that everyone else is wearing. I'm going to drink alcohol because other people drink alcohol. But then they're uncomfortable for this long period of time trying to conform. Whereas if you make it through that membrane, it's actually in service of being comfortable.
I guess that brings us to Maine. Like, I feel much more free in Maine compared to California because there's less social pressure. You're just doing whatever the hell is going
on. Right.
Like,
yeah.
Whatever the hell you want in Maine versus like Santa or like California. I feel like there's a lot more pressure, at least for me, to like act a certain way, dress a certain way, be a certain way.
Right.
And, yeah. Out there, like, I don't think there is such a thing as like a clothing social trend. Like, there obviously are, but it feels very different for me in Maine than in California.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember listening to an interview with James Clear, the guy who wrote Atomic Habits, and the interviewer asked, is there anything you wish you would have focused more on in the book, or you wish would have received more more attention? And he said the social component. He's like, habits and who we become are so determined by the people that we surround ourselves with.
And that's where health becomes very paramount for social interactions, because it's one of those things that you grow up in a certain environment, and some people definitely break away from what their parents, family, and friends did health-wise, but a lot of times it's growing up, eating the same foods, eating, like, surrounding yourself with similar people and patterns and habits that can really dictate a lot of health.
Right. How do you say no? Because that's really what we're talking about, right? Like someone's pre-diabetic and their family cooks unhealthy food every meal and they're home and they need to learn how to say no, or you're drinking alcohol.
It's so challenging when it comes to food, because so much is dependent on like what you can afford for food. So I still don't know how to take this, but I guess I see myself as like a warm, loving person. and a patient told me once, oh yeah, like my son and I call you the general. I was like, what? Like, what does that mean? They're like, you're just very direct in like how like things you can do and things you can't do. I was like, oh, I I don't see myself that way that often, but sometimes with like certain patients, it is very much like, no, you can't drink sugar. Like, it's just, like, you can't do that and not develop diabetes that you're going to be relying on insulin. Like, these things just don't
either
happen.
It's going to kill you or I'm going to kill you. One of the two.
No, so I was like, she's like, no, I mean it. And like, you're like the loving general. I was like, that still doesn't make any sense to me. But right. I guess so, yeah. Sometimes it's really easy for me to be very direct, and sometimes I'm the most wishy-washy person you've ever met. Because I guess it's hard with medicine because we research drugs that make money, and it's hard to recommend certain things because we just don't have the research to back it. So the good thing about like lifestyle medicine is that most of the risks are pretty low in terms of like,
try this.
Eat more fiber.
Right. Like, yeah.
That's an easy one, but yeah.
So tell me about Maine. You said that you feel that it's more comfortable for you living in 20 below degree weather on a farm. paint the picture of where you, because we grew up together in Santa Cruz. I always assumed that you would stay in or around California because you loved yoga. You loved yoga, and you're just like, you seemed like a very
do sound baths in front of the yoga.
So you're in that world. You're very much in that world, but you're also a total nerd. So you go deeper than most do. You don't stop at astrology.
But I do love astrology.
Of course, you do.
Vedic astrology. Vedic astrology specifically.
Keiko, no, you're so credible. No, what got you to Maine? And tell me then about, or let's just talk about where you live in Maine right now and the dichotomy between that and Santa Cruz.
I live in Liberty, Maine. It's a town of about 700. It is absolutely beautiful. There are a couple stores. There's a gas station and a t-shirt shop. Also, like, they print t-shirts. So they're actually a really awesome company, Liberty Graphics, that people all over the U.S. probably have gotten a Liberty Graphics t-shirt and just didn't realize it was made in Liberty, Maine. Because they're one of the first to do water-based inks, and they do a lot of printing on organic t-shirts, and they do a lot for museums and environmental groups and different earth-based patterns. It's pretty much the only wardrobe I have now. So that's there, and a used tool shop, which is kind of, those are Liberty Graphics, and Liberty Tools are kind of like the what's in Liberty, and Lake St. George, which is absolutely beautiful. So that's one of the big reasons that we're drawn to Liberty, being closer to my work, and the lake of like clean water. So I was like, that it was a big pull for me to stay in Maine is the water coming from California and Santa Cruz, and being in Henry Cowell and Scotts Valley, and coming back from New York, my undergrad, and then coming back from Maine and visiting here, and just every time it being like more and more parched, and the river San Lorenzo that we used to be able to like raft down as kids, just like
dribble,
you just like walk across easily. Yeah,
not last winter.
Oh yeah, so yeah, that was that. Yeah.
So you then moved out there to be close to work, and just describe the home and then the culture beyond it.
So we have almost 40 acres, which is a dream that I didn't realize was possible growing up in California until being in Maine. And so just space and beauty and dark skies and fireflies and thunder and lightning storms, and just like so much beauty in nature that is accessible outside my door. It's like amazing, an amazing gift, and having space and land to garden and plant lots of perennial fruits and berries and things like that. And I would say that's a big part of the culture in the area is, and a draw for us was the MOFCA, or Maine Organic Farm and Gardening Association. Cause that their hub is in Unity, which is about like 25, 30 minutes from us. So there's a lot of people attracted to the area that are back to the land, homesteaders, gardeners, who are really like enjoying and exploring nature and interacting. And it's a wide variety of people who are doing that. It's not like
political affiliation.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's everybody who is kind of moving towards that, living off your food and garden and canning and growing your own animals. And so it's definitely a major exploration for us, because coming from a yoga community, especially for my partner, it's not a, you don't kill animals. Mm. You don't kill and eat animals, but it's become kind of part of our existence to like know the animals, know our friend who is raising the pig, and be part of the process of like butchering and creating food for the year, which is something that I guess deep down I always wanted to be a part of, like learning a lot about like transition towns in college and how to like make life more sustainable and moving away from fossil fuels and being very reliant on your local community for that is, I guess, kind of a dream come true in that way. And like seeing how strong the local farming community is. And, I guess that's, I'm not trying to down anyone or anything, but like coming back here and like going to New Leaf and being like, oh, like it actually doesn't say, there aren't that many local farms that are like in the organic section. Mm. Like it's like, whereas going to like the Belfast Co-op, they're like,
you know where it all comes
from. There's a lot of local farms that you can see, like, oh yeah, I know that farm, like, oh, I know them. Like I drive by there on my way home, maybe I'll actually just stop by that farm and pick up food from there. It's like, and it tastes so good. So that's like a big driver, is that just love food so much. And my partner is like amazing at cooking food, especially like vegetables, and growing up vegetarian. So a big driver is just like, I guess it goes back to like feeling good, eating yummy food, and being able to share that with people is pretty amazing.
Totally. Yeah. My favorite part about this podcast is redefining comfort. Yeah. It's a super cool and profound theme for everyone to meditate on. Keiko. And how do you deal with the seasons changing? Do you enjoy that? Do you hate that?
I do.
Do you? There's a comedian, Mark Maron, who lives in L.A., and he's like, it's 82 degrees in L.A. every day, which is great because you don't feel time passing.
And that's something that it's so hard to think about it when you're working full time and doing the same thing all the time.
Right.
But coming to California this last week and talking with friends and being in this 82 degree weather in October, like, makes you, in talking to other people who have a friend that said, I feel sort of stagnant being in Santa Cruz right now. Thinking, I don't feel stagnant at all. Like there's like no, like you can't feel that.
Because the environment is,
except
changing
in the dead of winter, when you're supposed to feel like a little bit like drawn in and stagnant, because that's just like the energy of the time and the season. So that is very apparent, especially if you are gardening and taking care of the land and things like that, which if you own a house in Maine or have to take care of anything, you are like preparing for every season that occurs, because the elements of cold and freezing can ruin things. The elements of rain and mud can ruin things. The elements of heat can ruin things. So it's definitely like an entire, it's a lot of work to live in Maine. But I feel like it's rewarding.
It's amazing. Super cool. Doing your own thing out there. Do you have aspirations of starting your own practice? Or I feel like that's something you could do. Where like, is that on the horizon for you? Like doing Zoom, whatever, like meeting more personally with patients? Or like, what's your, where do you think you'll go from here with your practitioning?
Right now, I feel like I'm still in such a learning stage. And I'm probably one of those people that is extra cautious in that way. And other people would just be like spearheading and doing their own practice.
I'm an expert. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for you. Good for you. It's a balance. People try and shortcut their way to expertise so hard these days. It's fucking unbelievable. If people will pretend like they know what they're talking about when they're 30 years old and they're like, well, it's like, no, do that when you're 50. Like learn, apprentice, ask questions. It's so pervasive and you can do it on social media because all you need are like a couple good photos and like profound quotes from Ram Dass. And then all of a sudden you're like, I'm a health and wellness expert. Like, I didn't graduate high school, but I just do a lot of intuitive medicine.
Yeah. So I don't feel like I'm there. And
it's so good that you don't feel like you're there.
And I also told myself going into medicine that I also wanted to be sort of a bridge between Eastern and Western medicine, because I guess I've found so much benefit from traditional Chinese medicine and just learning about Ayurveda. It's kind of like hard not to get absorbed in it, being in Santa Cruz and having friends who have gone through trainings and doing some background in it. I want that to be more accessible to people in a regular setting. Not that I'm doing it, because I'm not certified or really doing that with patients, but it's just like knowing about the cycles of the seasons and what foods are generally what foods are better for you and what you can eat and what your digestion can handle during the different seasons are kind of like basic concepts of Chinese and Ayurveda, Chinese medicine, Ayurveda. But just letting people know that there are like other options out there in like a regular medical setting. Part of it is like California is like there's so many practitioners of acupuncture and herbs and Ayurveda that are easily accessible, not as much in Maine, though there are people, but I guess I want to be able to somehow I'm still figuring that out, but I guess functional medicine and lifestyle medicine is more the way that I'm going about it right now to be able to like do that directly with my patient care, but being able to just let people know of other ways of healing and health is part of my practice. And that's not accessible to everybody if you are doing direct specialized medicine for people who can afford that. It's like still like, being in an office where people can see you who aren't necessarily seeking that, but a lot of people who are appreciating that as part of my background.
Sure.
I feel like is important at least at this point.
So cool. So cool. Yeah. Do the work in the places that need it, you know, need it most. It's great. Any last words? This is a fun podcast. Anywhere people can find you if they want to reach out?
No, I'm hiding.
Are you hiding?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a pretty like low social media presence right now because I'm definitely, I guess I've intentionally like moved away from.
Of course you have.
Instagram.
Is it, but you don't want people to reach out to you?
They can reach out to me via Instagram.
Okay. And what's the Instagram?
Keiki Kurita.
Okay.
We'll if you can spell my name correctly.
Keiki Kurita.
But
I love that you had to think about what the, you're like, what was the, what's the handle?
Yeah, it's not my name, but it is very close to my name. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, this thanks was for having me.
Absolute blast, and I was very impressed with the depth and breadth of knowledge that you have in your noggin. That was very impressive and helpful, I think, for people to think about. Redefining comfort.
Oh, I guess there is something it's more scientific that I wanted to just make very aware to people is in practicing the last couple of years, realizing how pervasive B12 deficiencies are in older adults. That is something that I feel like people don't realize, or a lot of my patients who have been going throughout their lives didn't realize, but like everyone who's on a proton pump inhibitor for acid reflux, like omeprazole, Prilosec, things like that, who are getting older, our stomach acid as we get older just decreases. And so absorption of nutrients, especially B12, goes down. So B12 deficiencies are huge in older adults, and being low in B12 and things like other B vitamins can add to risk of dementia, issues with anxiety, depression, memory, things like that. So that I feel like is just like a public service announcement. Like if you're on omeprazole, lansoprazole, pantoprazole, anything like that, and you're over the age of 50 and or 60, and getting a B12 level checked is like super important, especially if you're on metformin, because metformin, an extremely common diabetes medication, which is extremely helpful for people, also gives you a B12 deficiency. And so like those two together are very common, and I feel like I just see it too often that that's not being addressed. But yeah, kind of an easy fix for people that they can ask their primary care doctor to check for and see if they need it.
Boom. Great way to go out. Thank you so much. This was a blast. That's our show. Before you head off into your day, you can go to tierman.substack.com to get my newsletter, my articles, thoughts, ramblings. If you want to hear more from me, tierman.substack.com is the place to be. That's it for now. Thank you so much for tuning in. Get out in the water, whatever body of water is closest to you, lake, river, bathtub, or ocean. I promise it will make your day better. See you soon.